Hi, and welcome to the Well Read Podcast, a bi-weekly discussion on books and reading. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Anne.
And we are librarians who love to read and talk about books. And today our theme is Here Comes the Sun. Anne, this was your idea. Would you like to explain where the inspiration came from?
It's spring.
That's the inspiration. You wouldn't know it right now because it is kind of cold in North Carolina. But last weekend, it was 80-something and sunny. It was so beautiful.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, wonderful. It's really cold here, too. So But just as of yesterday, it got cold. Yeah. So it's a little bit frustrating. But yeah. I think I've told you this before, that I have very mixed feelings towards spring because of my engagement that happened during the spring. Right. And so I typically have very, like, trauma feelings around it. And mm-hmm. I am proud to say, after 14 years, this is the first spring where I have not had, like, a bad feeling.
Really?
In the pit of my stomach. Yeah. So I was like, yay, 14 years
later. Congratulations. That's
all it took was to be excited about spring again. So it's been a lovely spring. It's been really pretty outside and just great weather. And although, I mean, besides tornado fears and those kinds of things, but other than that, it's great. So
I love spring. There is something, I just love the longer days. As soon as that time change happens, I know people complain about it because change in schedule and sleep and all those things, but oh my gosh, I love it because I love that it's light later. You finish work, you don't feel like the day is ending 30 minutes later or not even, you know, sometimes it's basically getting dark as soon as work ends. So I love it. I love the warmer weather. And here, I'm guessing it's pretty much the same in Nashville, but we have such hot summers here. So spring is so great because you can be outside without wilting in the heat.
Right, right.
You know, it's easier to take the dogs for a walk. It's just nice. You could sit outside, have dinner and things like that. And I love the heat. Like, I don't have a problem with how hot it gets in the summer, but there is just something special about being out in the springtime weather and seeing all the flowers. I just love it.
It. It's great to be back in it.
Do we want to talk now about how we interpreted this theme, or do we want to talk about it as we go through our books?
I think we could talk about it a little bit now. I think that we just sort of decided, or at least this is how I interpreted it, that anything that sort of made sense for that phrase is something that I was willing to go with. So mm-hmm. I picked some stuff that sort of has a spring feel to it. I picked some things that are about new beginnings. Mm-hmm. Most of my books, or I guess we're not talking about that many books each, but two of my books are specifically about new beginnings mm-hmm. and sort of refinding oneself. So and then how did you, like, we had some other ideas when we were discussing it. So how did you approach it?
I've approached it in a similar way. So I have one romance that sun comes into play that I will explain when I get there. But the other two books are more that, like, new beginnings feeling, or after having gone through a hard time, that ray of hope where things are looking up.
That's
sort of how I interpreted it. So there were actually a lot of ways I feel like I could have gone once I started thinking about what books I wanted to talk about. I could have picked lots more books to talk about, because I think this is fun that the theme is open to interpretation. I think lots of times we pick something pretty concrete that has still a lot of choices to it, but it's pretty specific of what kind of book we're talking about. So this is fun to do something where you could take it in different directions. So I enjoyed that. Okay, what's your first one?
I realized, it's funny that you said how many things you had to pick to do this, because I realized how many dark things I read.
So, this is no surprise to anybody.
So I picked, it wasn't so much that I didn't have things to pick from. I really didn't want to have the same type of story over and over again. And especially because a lot of books that I had read that are about new beginnings tended to be very, very white. And I didn't want that to be the only story that I told in these books. So it mm-hmm. got harder and harder to find something that I thought could work. So I like what I ended up with, but I kept thinking, I know this will be such an easy topic for Hallie, and I know this isn't the case for me. I thought it would be easier for me, but it just, even things that were sort of relationship fiction where it was about someone turning a new leaf or coming into their own, they still had too difficult of a path to get there that made this feel like it. I didn't feel like there was enough like sunshine at the end to really qualify it in this topic. So it was just an interesting exercise, I think.
That's so funny to me since you're the one who came up with the topic and then it was difficult.
It seemed like a good idea at the time, but it worked out in the end because I found stuff. So the first thing I will talk about is Village School by Miss Reed. And this is the first book in the Fair Acre series, and it's centered around rural English village life in the village of Fair Acre. And Miss Reed is the pseudonym for a woman named Dora Saint, who is a schoolmistress before she started writing in 1955. And this series actually went on for 20 books. It ended in 1996, which is a really long time. I was kind of shocked when I learned that. And I picked this. There isn't really a plot to this book. It's just little vignettes. And I haven't read the entire series, but the books that I've read from it, they're just little vignettes of village life throughout the year. And you'll meet these different characters that are in the books, and each chapter is about sort of an event that's going on in the year of the village. And so it's not at all contained to the spring, but that's still my feeling every time I read this series, because when I think of quaint British life, somehow it's always very spring-like. So this might just be a little bit of a personal pick on my part. Maybe other people would read this book and think, oh, this doesn't feel spring-like at all, but I feel like some of the innocence of this book, uh-huh, and the, like, it definitely has a very innocent tone. It's a very optimistic series, and that to me feels like spring more than any other season. This is a book that just kept coming to mind as I was picking my books, and so even though I was like, oh, this really doesn't take place in technically the entire book takes place at different times of year, there's parts in the spring but not the entire thing, and I still had to go with it because it just felt spring-like to me. So, and as everyone knows that listens to this at all, I love seasonal reading, and sometimes seasonal things are just coming from tone and not the actual plot of the book. So that's why I went with that. That's mm-hmm. Village School by Miss Reed.
That sounds lovely. And I think that's a perfectly good reason to have chosen it. So my first one is The Language of Flowers by Vanessa Diffenbaugh.
Oh, this is a great book.
Well, and so this was extremely popular, gosh, more than 10 years ago, 15 years ago?
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
Maybe not quite. Maybe like 2010, 2011.
Yeah. That's almost 15 years ago.
You're right. That is. It's not that far from 15 years ago.
Yeah.
So I thought maybe there are people who missed it at the time. So I thought I would go ahead and talk about it because I do think it fits the theme very well. So it is about the main character, Victoria, who was in foster care since birth. And she bounced around between different foster homes. She never found a permanent place to stay. And so on her 18th birthday, she is emancipated from the foster system. But she has no money, she has no job, she has no support system. I mean, she's truly just on her own. But she, when she was growing up, she did have one foster mother whose name was Elizabeth, who was really kind to her and who taught her all about flowers and the meaning behind them, or the language of flowers, as the title indicates. So Victoria takes that knowledge and starts doing some work for a florist. At first, from what I remember, very kind of piecemeal work. You know, I think she is going to just deliver flowers occasionally or something like that, but she just needs to make money. So she starts by doing that, and then it's clear to the florist that she actually really knows what she's doing with flowers. So she hires her, and she meets somebody named Grant at this florist, and she immediately has a connection with him. But because of the way she was raised, she has really hardened her heart and has always felt so unloved that she doesn't want to open herself up to anybody. She doesn't want to feel vulnerable. It's very difficult for her to accept any sort of love or affection. So the book goes back and forth between her time specifically with Elizabeth when she was a foster child, and then the current day, or current day when the book is set, as she's trying to make it on her own. And as she's working at this florist, you start seeing her interacting with the people that come in to buy flowers and making the connections with them because of this skill that she has and this ability she has with the language of flowers. So she's able to match people with specific flowers based on what they want or the person that they're sending the flowers to, what they need. And so it's just this really beautiful story about her starting to open herself up and really seeing that glimmer of hope, like I said, that glimmer of sunshine after a long and hard life that she's led so far. And so that is The Language of Flowers by Vanessa Diffenbaugh.
I remember this is a book that you assigned to me for a...
Oh, did I?
I mean, years and years ago for a reading from our TBR's episode, I think. And I remember how much it surprised me of how enjoyable it was, because I was one that thought it sounds good, but it kind of was like kind of felt very Oprah booky, and I just wasn't at the top of my list. And so once I read it, I thought, oh yeah, this was very, there's like a calmness to it that I really enjoyed. Yeah. And it's a pretty lovely book. So my next book is A Lady for a Duke by Alexis Hall, and this is a romance, because any book that has Duke in the title is contractually obligated to be a romance. That's just a fact. So it is about Viola Carroll, who fought and died in the Battle of Waterloo, and she was at least presumed dead. She used the opportunity of being mistakenly declared dead to restart her life as a woman as she had always known herself to be. And that meant that that she had to give up the title she had inherited, her wealth, nearly every connection she had, but now she can be free in ways that she never thought were possible. The one thing, though, that she really deeply regrets is losing the friendship of the Duke of Gracewood, Justin Devere. They were lifelong companions and basically as close as friends can be. But she felt like that was her only choice after she had this opportunity to restart her life. So several years after the end of the Napoleonic Wars is when the book begins. And Viola has settled into a quiet life as a companion to her I think it's her sister-in-law, and she's named Lady Marley, and she's the only person who knows Viola's full story. So Lady Marley is invited by Justin's sister to go to the Devere estate, and Viola is brought along as a lady's companion. And I don't remember now, and I didn't have a copy with me, unfortunately. I apologize for that. I can't remember if she knew they were going there or if it's a surprise, but she definitely doesn't expect to see Justin, and she doesn't expect the condition that he's in when they get there. Basically, since the war, Justin's life has completely fallen apart because he is suffering from PTSD, from the trauma of the war, and from losing his best friend, and is physically struggling from wounds that were sustained in battle, and therefore has come to completely rely on alcohol. So Viola can't reveal her past to him, obviously, but she decides that she will try to make him into the man that he used to be without letting him find out that he actually knows her. But at the same time, when Justin doesn't recognize her, Viola is kind of upset that she doesn't, or that he doesn't recognize her, because they had once been so close. So soon they've become friends, but the friendship begins to develop into something else that they don't really have names for, because they still feel this intense closeness. And it's not a spoiler to say that eventually Justin does realize that he knows Viola, but I liked that it wasn't just a quick conversation. It wasn't something that's just we're easily past this. Mm-hmm. Justin's really upset that she let him think that she was dead. But it also addresses how that was a very necessary thing. And the romance comes from them both accepting each other's decisions in this this case. So I picked this because the story always comes back to this idea of freedom, and in this case, literally being born again. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of sadness in this book because both Viola and Justin are dealing with a tremendous amount of grief and trauma, But I liked that the conflict didn't come from an outside force, but it's ultimately about their inner struggles and then how that pays off in the end and how that brings them closer together. So I read this a couple of years ago for the committee, and I still very vividly remember the epilogue, which is, without giving anything away, it's a moment of complete freedom and absolute joy for Viola. And so that's what made me pick this for our theme, because it's just kind of an unadulterated joyous moment. So that is A Lady for a Duke by Alexis Hall.
That sounds lovely.
Yeah, I think you would like this one.
Yeah, I checked it out from the library one time, and it's very thick. It is, for a romance. It's a pretty thick book, so I didn't end up reading it, but I do want to get to it sometime. All right, my next one is The Garden of Small Beginnings by Abby Waxman, and this is about Lillian, who is in her mid-30s. And she lost her husband 3 years before the start of the book, very unexpectedly. So she is now raising two young daughters all on her own and is feeling like she's managing to hold it together, but not thriving. She is definitely still grieving. She's still very much feeling the loss of her husband. She's trying to raise her daughters in a way that they don't know that she's still so sad and still grieving, and it's just a difficult situation to be in. So she works at a textbook publisher as an illustrator, and her job seems like it may be coming to an end, that they're not going to need her anymore. And she gets an opportunity, kind of like a last-ditch opportunity, to illustrate an encyclopedia of vegetables. And as part of the assignment, they want her to take a 6-week gardening class so she can truly understand how one would draw vegetables and all the various aspects of them. So she starts attending the class with her sister and her daughters, and going to this class really starts to pull her, not necessarily out of her grief, but showing her that while she'll always miss her husband, there is the possibility that she could be happy again, that she could have a life that feels fulfilling and satisfying, and she can laugh again and enjoy life again. And I found this book to be just so heartfelt and wonderful. All the characters you meet in the gardening class are really fully formed. They feel like real people, and you get to see the relationships develop between all of them and how they all start becoming more comfortable with each other and really form kind of a found family. And there's like a hint of a romance, but nothing too, it's definitely not a romance. It's really about the main character coming out of her grief and seeing that there is sunshine to be had. And so that is The Garden of Small Beginnings by Abby Waxman.
Abby Waxman is just a great author for that type of story.
She is.
Generally.
She is, yeah. I really enjoy her books. I haven't read her most recent one, but I've loved. And then she has a new one, I think, coming out too. But I really loved everything she's read. This is my favorite, though. Well, I don't know. There's that one about the trivia team.
I was thinking Nina Hill.
That one. The Bookish Life of Nina Hill. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that was my second one.
Perfect. Okay, so last I will talk about Mika in Real Life by Amiko Jean. And I have talked about this one a couple of years ago. I usually try to space things out a little bit more, but then we come back again to how much I struggle to find books that fit into this theme, especially books that are not just by white authors about white people. And so I thought that this one was pretty perfect for the theme, and I definitely wanted some better representation than just a bunch of white women in my books. So this is about a woman named Mika Suzuki, who has just been fired from her job, which would be bad enough, but she is 35 and the job was basically a glorified internship. She had never really achieved any of the dreams that she had thought she would after she gave up a baby for adoption when she was a freshman in college. And she made that choice because she wanted to give up her baby, because she wanted a better life for her daughter than what she could give, but also because she was feeling a lot of pressure from her very traditional parents, who wanted her to fulfill their ambitions. And then none of that really panned out. So she knows that her daughter is with a loving family in Ohio, and she's grateful for that, but she herself doesn't feel like she's done anything to justify the sacrifice of giving up her baby. Like she hasn't done any of the things that were her reasons for doing that. one day after this firing, she's in Target and she's picking up some snacks that she can use to wallow after she's escorted out of her office. And she gets a random call, and it's a girl named Penelope, who is 16, and that's her daughter. And Penelope secretly found her online with the little bit of info that she had. She wants to have contact with Mika and learn as much as she can about her. And she especially feels drawn to her because Penelope is Japanese with white adoptive parents. And so she's very eager to get to know her family history. So as they have some conversations, Mika begins to embellish her life. And she says that she's still with her last boyfriend and she's starting a gallery for local artists. These are all things that she wishes were going on in her life, but they're not actually true. So this seems pretty harmless to her, and she feels like there's nothing wrong with saying who she wishes she were, but she basically just wants Penelope to be proud of her. So as they're getting to know each other over the phone, I think after a few weeks, then she's at a party when she sees that she's missed several calls from Penelope, and she gets a voicemail that says that Penelope had decided to use her birthday money to come out to see Mika at a gallery opening that Mika had told her about, which was not true. So at that point, many things happen. Lots of drama ensues. It's all pretty fun. So I picked this because it's about recognizing that your life isn't what it could or should be. And sometimes those are things that you, sometimes you see those instances yourself and you're able to pull yourself out of it. And sometimes you have to be forced to see it. And that's what I think is the case in this book, that Mika is forced to recognize that her life is not what it should be. And so change has to happen. And whenever I think of a life that kind of comes around to fruition or as it comes out of a stagnant place and into something better, then that always feels very sunshiny to me. So that was sort of my reasoning with having to pick this book. And so that is Mika in Real Life by Emiko Jean.
I'm pretty sure I said this the last time you talked about this book, but I liked parts of this book. I don't think I liked it as much as you did, but I agree. Yeah. I agree with you putting it on this list.
Yeah.
Okay, so my last one is Act Your Age, Eve Brown by Talia Hibbert. And this is the third book in the Brown Sisters trilogy. And I would recommend all three wholeheartedly, but we're going to talk about this one. And the reason I chose this is because I just felt like we really had to have a grumpy sunshine romance on our Here Comes the Sun episode, and that's what this is. So this is about Eve Brown, who is the youngest of the Brown sisters, and she is always kind of flitting from job to job, and it's not because she's not smart or anything. She just always is, it's like dogs seeing a squirrel, you know, that thing where it's like they get distracted. It's all of a sudden they're like, oh, let me go look at that shiny thing instead of this thing that I've been doing for a little while. So her parents tell her that if she doesn't find and stick with a job for, I think it's 6 months, she's not going to have access to her trust fund, and they're wealthy. And so this is how she's been able to not keep a job for a while, but they've had enough of it. And they say she has to keep a job. So she goes off and she ends up finding a job at a bed and breakfast where they are looking for a chef, and she can cook, but it's sort of a comedy of errors how she ends up getting this job. She accidentally hits the owner of the inn, and he is hurt. He breaks his arm, I think, and so he's unable to cook. So she says, well, I'll be your chef because I'm the one who did this to you. And they are immediately at odds with each other. He is a very kind of stern, uptight person, very grumpy, and she is just pure and utter sunshine. She's always happy. She's always upbeat. She's always just so cheerful and making everybody around her happy. And so at the beginning, they really rub each other the wrong way. Like, they just really don't like each other. But because they have to work together, they have to figure out a way to coexist. And so as the story goes on, you get to see how they both start appreciating the other one for who they are. And there's also an element, Jacob, I believe is his name, the male main character, is autistic. And Eve starts to recognize that some of what she is seeing is because of autism, and that makes her realize some things about herself. And it's just a really, really a good story. It's a great romance. That is Act Your Age, Eve Brown by Talia Hibbert.
I still have never read any of those books.
And no way, it's really?
I know, it's ridiculous.
Oh, they're good, and you would like them, I think. They're steamy, I think.
Oh, okay.
From my memory, I mean, not like out of the realm of what you would read in other romances, but I just think like they deal with some more serious topics.
Yeah.
All of the characters have some sort of either chronic illness or mental struggles or different things. So they do touch on some more serious topics, but they're really good. They're funny and I really liked them.
Yeah, it just has never come up with committee reading. I feel like it's always, they've been nominated when I haven't been on those subcommittee. It just has never worked out.
Well, and the most recent one she wrote was a young adult romance. So it's been a few years since Eve Brown came out.
Right. Next year, I'll try.
Next year, yes. All right. Well, we will be right back with what we're reading this week. Okay, Anne, what are you reading this week?
So first, I just also want to apologize. I'm trying to adjust my my mic manually mm-hmm. because I'm trying to not have it be as quiet as we've heard many times that I am. And for some reason, it just keeps self-adjusting. So I am apologies that the volume is on my end is probably going up and down quite a bit. We're trying to figure it out, but today is not the day we will have that figured out, unfortunately.
No, this is a little inside podcast recording. Usually we record earlier in the day, which is my prime time, like mornings. That's my time. Tonight,
yeah.
We are recording later than we usually do, and I want to get this wrapped up. So we're not gonna get into a lot of figuring out sound issues tonight. That's for future Hallie and Anne.
I love how we're setting them up for things that they're not ready for yet.
I know.
Okay, so I just finished listening to Good Taste by Caroline Scott, and this is a historical fiction book about women's domestic duties, and I feel like that is a huge trend right now with books like Lessons in Chemistry and Miss Eliza's English Kitchen and The Kitchen Front. This is just, there seems to be so many books about women in the kitchen mm-hmm. right now, and I am here for
yes.
it because
oh my gosh, I loved every book. Well, I haven't read Miss Eliza's English Kitchen.
Oh, I liked that one a lot.
I have it on my shelf because it was one we got for the committee, and then it moved publication dates, I think, or something.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, but I loved The Kitchen Front, and of course, I loved Lessons in Chemistry. So
yeah. So I haven't read The Kitchen Front, but I have read the other two, and I love like the history of food is one of my favorite topics. Just thinking about women's domestic lives, especially the physical labor that they have to do to keep a home, I think examining that is always really, really interesting. So this is one that was sort of guaranteed to be something I would enjoy. So this is set in England during the Great Depression. And I realized when I was reading this that I never actually think about the Great Depression happening outside of the US, but it did. There were other places that were deeply impacted by the Depression. And so this is sort of the British equivalent of that. So the main character is a woman named Stella Douglas, who is a biographer who is struggling to make ends meet. The book that she wrote most recently was very well regarded, but was not at all lucrative. And so she is called to an appointment with her editor in London, and she assumes that she's going to be released from her contract. But instead, he asks her to write a history of British food. And it's meant to be a morale boost for the nation and to remind them of better times. And if you're at all familiar with the WPA projects that happened mm-hmm. in the US, one of them was the America Eats Project, which sort of was a similar task of recording regional cooking in the US mm-hmm. and all these different authors went out, a lot of very famous authors mm-hmm. went out and were hired to write down this information. So it never got published, but this is sort of what came to mind when I was reading this book. So she dives in first by asking for people to submit recipes and memories by post, but she realizes pretty quickly that there's nothing very exciting or morale boosting about British food. It's in her mind all bland and not varied. There's sort of an impression in her head that anything exciting has come from somewhere else. And she's a very good cook. She's very, very interested in food, and her friends are all trained in French cooking. And so she has this very expanded palate, but the things that she's being sent are not representative of that. And so she feels like her editor has said, this has to be British. This can't be foods that have been brought from other places to Britain. It has to be purely British. And so she's feeling a little bit stuck because she's realizing how much has been transferred into the British or to the British Isles from other locations. So she decides that she's going to travel to various places in Britain to talk to women and find stories worth telling, and will find the memories that will help make British food come alive for her book. So I love this topic. I think it's fun. This is a book that I don't think I would, it wasn't one of the best books I've ever read by any means, but it was a very pleasant way to spend a few hours. So I just can't get enough of this type of story. So that is Good Taste by Caroline Scott.
That sounds good. I love stories like that. I'm going to have to add that to my list. Okay, so what I am reading this week is Just for the Summer by Abby Jimenez. And I love Abby Jimenez. We all know this. I talk about her all the time. But that's not going to stop me from talking about her some more. So this book just came out on April 2nd. And the premise of this book I just love so much. So it is that Justin is the male main character who posts this story on Reddit about how it seems like he always is the last person somebody dates before they then go on to find the person they're going to marry. And the reason he is telling the story is because his previous girlfriend broke up with him and then immediately fell in love with his roommate. And now his roommate has moved out to move in with this woman and left Justin with the apartment, which he could no longer afford. And so Justin got the ugliest dog he could find at the shelter and named it the same name as his roommate. so it's on the Reddit thread, which I can't say, but it's like, am I the jerk? Is another word for why. So asking people. So, which I just think is so funny.
It's one of the best places on the internet.
It is one of the best places on the internet.
It's so much fun.
So then Emma, who is a traveling nurse, sees this Reddit post and laughs at it and thinks to herself, that's so funny, because the same thing has happened to her, where she has dated men and then after they've broken up, the next woman they meet is who they marry. So she reaches out to Justin and they start having this conversation via DM saying, oh, isn't this funny, like, that we've both been in this situation? But for Emma, it doesn't really bother her because she has always been of the attitude that she's not really built for long-term commitment. She's always ready to move on to the next thing. But Justin comes up with this idea that they should date each other and then they'll break the curse that they each have, because if they date each other, then logically the next person that they would each date would be their soulmate. And so she's originally supposed to go to Hawaii for her next post as a traveling nurse, but instead she switches and decides to go to Minnesota, where Justin lives, so that they could try this, so that for the summer she's going to be living there and they can date. And they have a whole plan. They're going to go on, I think it's 4 dates, and they built it in that they're going to have one kiss and then they're going to break up and then they'll find somebody that's just made for them. But of course, very quickly, they start actually kind of liking each other. But it's just so...
Romance novels are so funny.
But it's just so good because, I mean, it is a silly premise. I think it's a fun premise, but it is...
No, it's totally fun. But
part of the reason why I like Abby Jimenez's book so much is because she can take that silly premise, and there's a lot of humor in her books, but there's also a lot of real character development, and the characters are very flawed and complex. They often are dealing with things in their past that are impacting how they're approaching relationships now. In fact, it reminds me a little bit of Funny Story by Emily Henry, which we just talked about, because both of these characters, Justin and Emma, have pretty complicated histories with their parents. And that plays a huge role in the dynamics of their relationship. I have just loved this. All I want to be doing is reading it. I don't want it to be over. That is Just for the Summer by Abby Jimenez.
That sounds very fun.
Yeah. Okay, let's go back and list off what we talked about today.
Okay, I talked about Village School by Miss Reed, A Lady for a Duke by Alexis Hall, Mika in Real Life by Amiko Jean, and what I'm reading this week, what I read this week, is Good Taste by Caroline Scott.
And I talked about The Language of Flowers by Vanessa Diffenbaugh, The Garden of Small Beginnings by Abby Waxman, Act Your Age, Eve Brown by Talia Hibbert, and what I was reading this week is Just for the Summer by Abby Jimenez. If you would like to get in touch with us to give us feedback or a suggestion on a topic you'd like us to discuss, you can email us at wellreadpod@gmail.com or find us on Facebook or on Instagram at wellreadpodcast. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or your other podcast provider of choice. Our theme music is Kitten by Poddington Bear. We keep our show notes at wellreadpodcast.wordpress.com, where you can find a listing of every book we talked about in this and every episode. Thank you all for listening. Happy spring and happy reading.